Very good afternoon to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So today is the 28th February 2021, Sunday. So this is the first lesson of our new class after Chinese New Year. So we are going to use the transcript book, all of our earlier transcript book. So, like I promise you all, we will go through this book. Who are you and what are you? That is the green book. So, this book is based on a direct transcript from the recording done during the Thursday meditation class as conducted by me in the year 2014, dated 15 May 2014. So, this was conducted at Brother Sui An's house, Subang Jaya. So, as explained earlier on, last time we were following the book, The Path to Truth, for modern day Bodhisattva practitioner. So we have finished that book. So now we will go back to all the transcript books that are very useful because my nature realized most of the teaching that is being shared has not really been penetrated or understood by most practitioners. Because even though there is this transcript book, soft copy in the website, hard copy given for free distribution, but most of the time only the serious practitioner or cultivator, they really read through or try to develop the understanding. So my nature realized, in order to benefit more people, especially Kailamita, we need to go through and review all these books so that you understand its proper meaning, the proper message that is being shared. Because different Kailamita at different level of cultivation, you will understand it differently. So it's not easy for most of you to have the penetrative understanding or ability to follow the Dhamma that is being shared. And because of certain condition at that time, during our earlier sharing, so this book came to mind. The title of this book is very interesting. There's a question mark about who are you and what are you. So it's a green book. So you have the book, you can take it up. If you don't have, we are going to show it to you because my daughter, Sui, she will get it from our website. So we will show you the print copy. Okay, we will start off by going into the book. The green book, you can see that. Then you can remember, get hold of this book. If you don't have, you can still request from us. I still have some. Then I think Sui An and Mifeng and Padmasri, they also should have. Okay, so we will go into the book proper. We start out with the content page. The content page is very useful. So this content page helps set out all the summary of title that you're supposed to know. So first content page information is an introduction which I will read to you afterwards. Then there's the acknowledgement of thanks to those who have helped make this possible and donated towards the cost of printing of this material. Then after that, we will also be acknowledging the thanks towards all those who have helped in one way or other throughout the transcript book. Then number three is the pre-class sharing, which is very useful. Then after that, we start our session one, which it's our typical Thursday class where we have the pre-puja. So this pre-puja for normal Thursday class when we have the full session is a more elaborate one, because during that time we will have formal offerings to the Triple Gem. Whereas during the Zoom video, we cut short the chanting of the offerings. The offerings are just like all simultaneous they offer at the altar. Then we just rejoice, and after that we start the class. But when we assemble on a former Tuesday, Thursday class, we will rejoice with all the offerings. Then all this offering will be passed around, and all the devotees who get to pass on the offering will rejoice in the offering and recall to mind all the significance of this offering. Then we will chant based on the format that we have introduced in our chanting book, for us to develop the faith, the spiritual faculties, and the understanding of the significance of all this puja offering. Then there is an aspiration towards the end where we will aspire for causes and conditions for different wholesomeness to arise using all this whatever wholesomeness that we have developed. So that is pre-puja. Then towards the end, there's a closing puja where most of us are familiar. So again, we share merit, transfer merit, you make your aspiration, then we end. Then in between, after that, I start my class by sharing on that day's topic. So that day's topic was the briefing on the Taiwan spiritual trip. That year, 2014, was a very significant year because we intend to have a spiritual trip to Taiwan. And that trip was very memorable, very significant. So that briefing is also very useful. Then when the actual trip take place, a lot of things happen. Very beautiful. I remember that trip. Brother Sui An and Mifo, they brought along Sui An's mother together with the wheelchair boarded onto the plane. It was a very significant trip and very beautiful, and the mother was full of joy and happiness because she did very well that trip at her age at that time, almost 80, I think. But the trip was very significant and meaningful to her, and she has a lot of faith and a lot of joy and many wholesomeness actually happened. And we visited all the important way place, the great Buddhist tradition of Taiwan, the four major great Buddhist tradition, and many other smaller temples. And we also visited a lot of places of interest and tourist attraction, including the famous 101 building, and also some of the tourist attraction of significance. If you want to recall, you go and view the photograph of our spiritual trip. That one will give rise to a lot of very good memories. It's really very memorable trip. And I think a lot of Kamita went for that trip, almost one full load, if I'm not wrong, about 30 plus or 40 of us. Then after that, we have the actual Dhamma sharing on who are you and what are you. So you can understand this, you will understand the Dhamma, you will penetrate the Dhamma, then you will be able to root out self-delusion, sakaya ditti. So when you can do that, you are beautiful. You can realize at least the first stage of sainthood, sotapanna shape. And the subheading are as follow. The five aggregates of form and mind, we have the first aspect, then the second aspect. This is most important. Then how self-delusion or Sakkayatiti is to be understood. Then the law of karma, karmic nature and spiritual nature. Then all the important right views. Understanding of what constitutes evil, the four right efforts, and the five ways to abandon unwholesome thought or wrong thought. Then the next one is most important, the silent mind. Third way, to train the mind, to realize our true mind. Then spacious awareness and specific phenomenal awareness. Then the five types of heavy karma, the three supporting conditions for the form and mind's existence. Then session two is question and answer, the Arahantship and Bodhisattva way. This one also very meaningful, very beautiful. Then we have finally the 31 plane of existence, clearly explained then those in puja. Okay, now we will start off with the introduction. It is Brother Teo's sincere hope that Dharma friends, spiritual practitioners, seekers of truth and cultivator will be able to make use of this enclosed transcript, Dharma notes, to develop a better understanding of the Dharma as taught by the Buddha, so that they may progress along the path of Dharma to become more virtuous, noble, and wiser human beings that can be a blessing to all of humanity and mankind. As these notes were mostly compiled based on the direct transcript from the recording done, its wordings will be more like those of spoken language rather than a written text. Hence, it is hoped that readers will be able to adjust themselves accordingly to understand its true meaning and intent better. And a good way to do this is to listen to the recording first, before reading this transcript note. For those who want to listen to the recording, they can download the talk at this link. This one is our website link, The website is brotherteo.com. So this is the link, the Dropbox. Oh yeah, it's a Dropbox link. Or you can contact Brother Suyan at the email sung4750@yahoo.com for further details. Okay. Then we come to the acknowledgement part. It is the donor's sincere intention that these transcript notes be given free to all those who are interested and have the affinity to receive them. I would like to take this opportunity to thank and rejoice in the generosity and wholesomeness of all those Dharma friends of Kayamita who had donated and helped out in one way or other, especially in the transcription, typing, typesetting, formatting, proofreading, etc., to make this free distribution of Dharma Dana possible. Special thanks should be accorded to Sister Padmasuri, who had personally taken the initiative to forward me her draft transcript for my subsequent editing, thereby enabling this Dharma book to be printed. By the power of this wholesomeness, may all beings be well and happy, free from all mental and physical suffering and danger, and may there be love, peace, and joy deep within their hearts. And may it also pave the way for there to be causes and conditions for all Dharma friends who had donated or helped out in one way or other to realize their good and noble wishes or aspirations soon as possible. In metta, always, Brother Teo. So this was dated towards the end of the year 1912-2014. Then we go into the sharing proper. So the first section is briefing on the special Taiwan spiritual trip, followed by the sharing of the Dhamma on who are you and what are you. So there is this pre-class sharing, which is the briefing. Today we will do the briefing for the Taiwan spiritual trip first. And that will take about half an hour or so. Then after that, as I had promised, I will share with you all one aspect of the Dhamma that many of you all had wanted to understand all this while. That is, when you all start to ask and inquire deeply into the question, who are you and what are you? This is a very, very important question. And very few people understand. Very few people can even explain to you who are you and what are you. So this is very important. Not only as a human being, but also about your true nature and how you come to this world. And what is this so-called human being all about? What is this form and mind all about? All these questions, you can have the answer and understanding because the Buddha had actually explained them very clearly in his teaching. So when we inquire into this question of who are you and what are you, we go beyond the form and mind, the physical human being. As I say, not only as a physical human being, but also about our true nature, our true mind, our awareness nature, our Buddha nature. And we also can develop the understanding of how we come to this existential world to live life, to arise as a human being in this life. And what is this so-called human being all about? What is the form and mind all about? And why the Buddha calls us the five aggregates of form and mind, the two aspects and all those related questions. So all these questions, you can have the answer and understanding because Lord Buddha had actually explained them very clearly in his teaching, but very few people can understand his teaching. So that is where the problem is. That is the reason why my nature wants to share this, because my nature has been asked many times this question by many people. Then I say, come in. Somebody came in late. We are still early. Then I asked, where is Yun Chan? She is supposed to brief you all on the logistic part of the spiritual trip to Taiwan. Well, that trip was organized by Yun Chan. Then after that, I will just give you all a summary of what this spiritual trip is all about. Then for those who are going, I will also give you some pointers as to how you all should prepare yourself so that this spiritual come to a trip to Taiwan can be more meaningful and useful. It can help you in many ways, especially the spiritual aspect of it, so that your coming trip can be very memorable and fruitful. Means a very memorable and fruitful spiritual trip. Then again, coming, there's some more new people coming, or those who are late, they just came in. Then I say, what is it? I think somebody mentioned the five mental hindrance and the five spiritual faculties, Dhammacat. They are very useful. So in the Thursday class, we have been using this. The other good news is, Yun Chan has just told me we had actually contacted the organization of our coming November 2014 Erme San spiritual trip. Erme Mountain is the spiritual way place of the great universal virtue Buddha Pusien or Samantara Bara Bodhisattva. We have managed to get him to increase the capacity to 32 pack from 20 pack. So we still have 12 more places. But I was told by Heaven Chan, about 5 has already been taken up. So for those who still wants to go and are interested, you can contact Sister Yun Chan. Then I said, Yun Chan, you want to prepare something on the logistic part of the Taiwan trip? And Yun Chan said, no need. Just need to draw something on the whiteboard to explain. Before the puja start, we still have 5 minutes to prepare yourself. I was told the KLIA 2 airport is very new and that the departure lounge is on level 3. Yun Chan has done a bit of study by discussing with those people who have been there before. Hence, she has some useful information to brief us on the logistic part. I hope those who are going can recheck your plane ticket to make sure that the dates are correct, means it match. We shall leave on the 20th of May and come back on the 26th of May 2014. Because earlier on, there was one ticket with the wrong departure date, departing on the 22nd of May instead of 20th. Luckily, the error was detected before the check-in date, and she managed to get it rectified immediately by paying some money. So please do yourself a favor by checking the dates, and even if you have made a mistake, don't panic, because you only need to get it rectified by paying the difference in the fees. The Taiwan trip will be quite unique because we are going to visit these 3 very famous Mahayana temples or traditions. They are Ciji, famous for compassion in action, Fo Quang San, famous for Buddhist studies, and Fa Gu San, Dhammadram Mountain, famous for meditation training. Taiwan is very blessed because they had these 3 great Buddhist traditions, and for me there are conditions that suggest I should go and lead the trip. This is a spiritual counter trip to Taiwan with emphasis mainly on these 3 way places. We will make full use of whatever condition when we are there to do all the wholesomeness so that all Kayamitas can benefit from such spiritual trip. This one we always do, all spiritual trip. We will have the funds ready. First of all, we will use the Kayamita fund to donate, make offering towards this spiritual trip common fund. Then we will suggest a recommended donations, a reasonable, appropriate small amount of donation from each Kayamita going on this field trip, so that we have sufficient money for us to do whatever wholesomeness when we are there. So that one will be decided by us. Then also for those who are not able to make the trip but who are willing to also make offering or donation, they can. So these funds will all go into a spiritual trip common fund for that particular spiritual trip. Then whatever wholesomeness we do, all Kayamita will benefit because the Kayamita fund actually partake in the offering. And most of the time the Kayamita fund is the biggest portion or lion's share of the whole spiritual trip. So most of the time, our Kayamita fund will donate at least 1,000 ringgit or sometimes 2,000 ringgit, depending on the trip, the condition, then all this wholesomeness that we do will go a long way to pave the way for causes and condition for all calamities to progress along the path of Dhamma and to develop the wholesomeness. Okay, then we continue. We will make full use of whatever condition when we are there to do all the wholesomeness so that all kaimita can benefit from such spiritual trait. So for those who are not going, you all don't have to worry because we have both the Tuesday and Thursday classes kaimita funds to donate 1,000 each. That's why it's total 2,000 towards the trip's common fund. So as to enable all kaimita to also partake in whatever wholesomeness that we do while we are there. Then we all can also rejoice with the wholesomeness. Those who still want to donate on their own, they can pass the money to Stephanie, who is one of our treasurer. We will then pull them into a common fund for this Taiwan trip so that all can partake in whatever wholesomeness that this common fund do while we are there. Okay, 8:30, we shall start off with the puja first, then later Yun Chan can continue with the briefing. Let us compose our mind to develop the sadha, the faith in the Buddha Dhamma and his teaching, and the virya of spiritual zeal. Then we will pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha before we start off with our puja. So after the puja, we have our first session, pre-puja. The main intent of the pre-puja is to cultivate the five spiritual faculties that is needed to counter the five mental hindrances of mind. So sadha can be developed via understanding how special and how wonderful the Buddha is and how important his teaching is, so that your faith in the Buddha and his teaching can be established until it is unshakable. When this happens, your confidence in the Buddha and his teaching will make your mind very calm and very composed. And through that, your virya or spiritual zeal needed to cultivate his teaching will arise naturally. With that, you can easily understand his teaching, because this is a spiritual faculty that enable you to understand his spiritual teaching. And you can also assimilate whatever has been shared much more easily. Once the sadha and virya are established, we will pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha to cultivate the third spiritual faculties of sati or mindfulness. And then we will start the pre-puja chanting. So this pre-puja chanting, I will run through it quickly. So first is salutation to Lord Buddha. We chant Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa 3 times. The meaning is homage to thee, the blessed one, the worthy one, and the fully enlightened one. Then we take refuge. Buddhang saranang gacchami, dhammang saranang gacchami, then tatiyampi, dutiyampi, and all those things. So the 3 refuge. After that, we renew our 5 precepts, panatipata, etc. Then we rejoice, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Then normally we also have the offering and the standard chanting, but this particular sharing we didn't. It's okay. So I say, okay, let us pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha to end the pre-puja. Then we continue with our briefing on the Taiwan spiritual trip. Okay, a very good evening to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Just relax yourself, body and mind, and maintain some form of awareness within. Then we will start. So you have to pay attention when I say relax body and mind and maintain some form of awareness within. means you maintain awareness. Don't think, no need to think, just maintain awareness, be alert. Like I said, tonight we shall have a pre-spiritual trip briefing for those going to Taiwan. And for those who are not going, you can also listen because it is beneficial. It will benefit you too. So now I will get Sister Yun Chan to brief you all. So Sister Yun Chan started by saying, good evening, brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. We are going to Taiwan trip. We are going to Taiwan on the 20th of May, which is next Tuesday. The flight is at 10 a.m. And this trip was co-organized by me and another Tuesday class, Kayamita. Oh, Sister Hui Rong. Yeah, correct. Yeah, Hui Rong is a Taiwanese. So she actually played a great role. Who is a Taiwanese? The agent is an ex-Reliance manager who will help make all the ground arrangement tour for us. And we just book our ticket and fly there. We had a slight problem here because KLIA Tour Airport is new and we had to make our way there during this transition period. So departure hall is at level 3 and after you check in, we shall all assemble to meet at the Royal Selangor outlet, which is nearby. So it's very thankful of Sister Yun Chan and very caring of her to actually foresee all this and prepare us and give us this very vital briefing. Then after that, I continue. I shall now brief you on all the spiritual aspect of the tour. Okay, for those who are going, always remember, this is a spiritual come tour trip that is quite relaxed, but will benefit you all very much spiritually. So the main intent is not to make it into a very boring type of spiritual trip alone where everything also focus on the Dhamma, the teaching, the spiritual aspect of the teaching. Then it defeats the purpose because after paying for all the expenses, the air ticket, the whatever ground arrangement and the requirement for this trip, we didn't really have a tour of Taiwan. And during that trip, I think most of us were flying to Taiwan for the first time. There are some who has been there before, but most of us are for the first time. That's why I incorporated this spiritual come to a trip. Means it's not only 100% spiritual. We also have our dual agenda. We also really make it a memorable, like a tourist type of memorable trip where we really travel to all those places that Hui Rong recommended. And she is very good because she is from Taiwan and she knows which are the good places. And we really had a very, very good trip. Okay, I read on. For those who are going on the trip, you just have to recall to mind the great three Buddhist Mahayana tradition that I spoke of earlier on, which we are going to visit. The first one is Shiji in Hualien, headed by the very famous master Zheng Yan Fasi, whose trademark is compassion in action. This is the place where we will pay a visit and make our offerings and donation, and we should all rejoice. That morning before we leave for airport, if you can, please wake up early to do a simple puja, then maintain some form of joy in your heart. Be mindful and heedful throughout, even as we move towards the airport. Then for all those who are not going as Kayamita, you all can also rejoice with the wholesomeness. Like I had earlier on explained, Kayamita Fund has also donated 2,000 towards this spiritual trips common fund to partake in whatever wholesomeness that we all do while there. We should rejoice by saying sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Then after that, when we are there, like all our earlier spiritual trip to the various part of Thailand, Laos, Vientiane, and Luang Prabang, and China, etc., they are all very wonderful, beautiful, and rather meaningful and memorable trip. So if you can compose your mind and maintain heedfulness throughout the spiritual trip to develop your faith, sadha, virya, and sati, and daily mindfulness, you will receive a lot of blessings and wholesomeness. This is very true. That's why your faith has to be very strong. Then when your faith and other spiritual faculty are very strong and very well established, then when you all are there, then when you all are at these three great Maya traditions, way places, especially Tsuji, Fo Quang San, and Fa Ku San, where the energy there, I believe, will be very beautiful and strong. You all only need to silence your mind to connect, and you all will be able to reap and tap a lot of these good energies that can help you all progress along the path of Dhamma very much faster. The reason is when you silent, you stay with your true mind, your awareness nature. That is what meditation is all about. If you cannot silent, you cannot realize your true mind. You cannot realize your true mind. You cannot draw. You cannot feel. You are insensitive, you are lost in thought, heedless. But when you are completely silent with the spiritual faculty, your nature manifests, then you are sensitive, you can draw, you can receive a lot of very beautiful vibration and energy. Then they can activate your nature. They can actually give rise to a lot of wholesomeness. The cultivator will understand. Those who have this ability will understand. So these are very wholesome. And when your faith is very strong, anything can just happen. Sometimes you will know, you will trigger off awakening or transformation. Then when we travel together as a group, our collective or group consciousness is different. Because by now, our Kayamita force is already very different. And that was the main reason why we delayed 1 or 2 years for this trip. We supposed to go earlier, but the timing was such, we just echoed and flow. Then it happened 2 years later, 2014 instead of 2012. When you all can really benefit from such trip, then by the time you all come back, you all will know that any of these way place you go, if you develop the ability to silence your mind, to contemplate, to reflect, to renew your faith, and make the appropriate aspiration, then rejoice, you will reap great benefit. That can happen. And that can help you progress along the path of Dhamma speedily, along the path of Dhamma speedily means it will make your progress much more easier, faster. The word is faster. Also, you can have the means. You should try your best to donate whatever you can afford to such way places, because they are meaningful and very fertile for wholesomeness and can be of great benefits. So such conditions are very rare. So you can partake in this offering to those great Mayana traditions temple. You should try your best to do so because it will pave the way for many wholesome things to arise in the future. Then, okay. So with this, I will just conclude my briefing. Huh? Unless you have any question, then we will still continue to answer your question. Anybody has any question as to how to prepare yourself for these spiritual trips? Yeah. Then I think Mimi wants me to elaborate a little bit on. Elaborate a little bit for those who are going on how we can develop the affinity with the three great masters of the three great Mahayana tradition that we are going to visit. This one is a very good question and is a very good reminder. Then I answered her. I said, for Fa Gu San, Master Sheng Yan Fa Shi, Chi Chi Wan is Sheng Yan Fa Shi. So Fa Gu San is Sheng Yan Fa Shi. He has passed away at the time, about 2+ years ago. If I'm not wrong, at that time I said, when I heard of his passing, even though physically he is not there, but he has a nature which will always exist. So if you have faith in his nature, when you are there, you can still connect to his nature by making the appropriate aspiration. We are invoking the power of your merits and wholesomeness, etc. First, you can rejoice with his great work and all of his great wholesomeness and meritorious condition and opportunity that he had created for the people of Taiwan and those from all over the world. He is very famous and he specializes in meditation. You can actually sincerely request for causes and conditions for his nature to guide you along the path of Dhamma so that you can develop the meditation appropriately or in a proper manner so that you can also awaken soon as possible. Then when you go to Chi Chi, you can develop the great compassion of Master Chen Yan Fa Shi. You can also pay respect to her to develop the affinity. Was told if you go there early, you can meet her because she gives Dhamma talk almost every morning at about 5 a.m. After paying your respect, you can make your aspiration. Then you can invoke the power of merits and wholesomeness, etc. to develop affinity with her nature. Via your donation, etc., you can aspire for it to arise the causes and conditions for Master Chenyan's nature to guide you in whatever cultivation she is good at, especially her great compassion. Also, how to develop the great compassion in you so that the perfection of that virtue can be cultivated just like how she had cultivated hers. Then when you go to Singing Fa Shi, Fa Gu San Wei Place. Fo Quang San. Thanks for pointing out. Fo Quang San, which is the Wei Place for the center of great Buddhist learning. You can do the same to develop affinity with Master Singing. So they are very famous. Great masters of these three great Buddhist traditions. These three great Mahayana traditions, when you combine their practices, you will become an all-rounder, a fully evolved cultivator. Fa Gu San training would enable you to know how to meditate. Then Chi Chi, you can learn what is compassion in action. Then you will know how to act and live life. Then you learn the sutra or the teachings from Fo Quang San. Actually, you should go to Fo Quang to learn the sutra first. Then go to Fa Ku San to learn meditation. Then finally go to Cici to learn about great compassion, to do the great work and be a blessing to all. So these are the three great traditions. When we combine all these expertise, they can be developed into great wisdom and virtue like those of Lord Buddha. This tour will be unique, as I can sense it. It is going to be very beautiful because the condition had all fallen into places. And also because by now most of the Kayamitas already have that understanding, and it will be very meaningful when we travel together. The group collective consciousness and energy will be very different. And if I'm not wrong, many of the non-humans and Dharma protectors or higher beings' nature are already waiting for our arrival soon. Just like all the other spiritual way places that we have gone to earlier, and it is going to be very beautiful too. Okay, so with that, we will end. But I would like to add in something before I go into the actual Dharma proper, so that people can understand deeper. Because after that, when we go to the trip, when we went for this spiritual trip, not only what I predicted turned out to be exactly the same or if not better. In fact, we had quite a bit of surprises too. We end up visiting much more temples. Then I realize there's another great tradition which is very new, which was established in Taiwan at that time. It's a very new way place or temple, just completed not long. Then somehow you were lucky because Huirong managed to include that place as an itinerary. It was so famous. It attracted so much tourists. I later came to know that it was Zhong Tai Chan Si. The abbot was a 90-year-old, near 200 years old abbot. And he is full of wisdom and compassion. He actually developed that tradition to allow cultivator to plant the seed of Bohi to walk the path of the Bodhisattva. That's why that tradition is very unique. And I remember what that abbot mentioned, because he don't want people to have misconception of what he do. For those who don't know, they thought, how can a Buddhist tradition or temple receive so much offering and donation and spend it like lavishly on the beautiful temples and all those things? So the first impression by most people was, wow, how come they can afford to gather so much money and make this place so big and so beautiful? Then later on, when I received this booklet, then when I read, my nature rejoices, and it arises the understanding, which is very beautiful. Because in his own words, the abbot said, he said his intent is very simple. He knows if he do it in such a way, this place will not only become a very famous way place, it will be a very great tourist attraction too. It will attract a lot of tourists. So the intent is not to make money through tourism or whatever. The intent, he say, he expect or understand that every year there will be a lot of tourists visiting that place. Millions, according to what he mentioned. Millions will visit that place that we play, Zhongtai Chanshi. Then he said, his sincere intent is very simple. Out of these millions every year, even a handful or even one can really come and be motivated to plant the seed of Bodhi deeply and walk the path of the Bodhisattva. He said it's worth all the effort, the while, and the money that they have spent. Because from one genuine cultivator that plant the seed of Bodhi, it can trigger all the causes and conditions for this being to become a great being. And from there on, the wholesomeness that will arise will multiply and become limitless, because it can touch the heart of limitless living being. Whoever take the vow to walk the path of the Bodhisattva, they will become great being finally. He said, even if one succeed, enough. And my nature rejoiced that I knew what he meant. And that is why it's so beautiful. Then when we were there, we were so fortunate. We were the only group there, I think, who were somehow, as we visited that place, as we finished, then finally we go up to the main shrine where the main attraction is. It's supposed to be a 7-story building, I think, if I'm not wrong. Then they have this very big statue of, I think it's Yao Si Fo, medicine Buddha, or I forgot already, one of the great beings. Then up there in the upper level, there are many sacred chambers where the great beings statue and nature, they were all there. They were very beautifully crafted and designed. Even the meditation hall, the shrine, everything was so beautiful. The energy was so strong. Then we were so lucky. As we were there, normally certain area like is not open to public one, right? Like forbidden places where public cannot visit. But that day, I don't know what happened during that time when we were there. There was suddenly the news that for those who are already inside there, they can visit. They open up because of certain event or incident. So we were all very excited and we went up. Then we really saw the thing I can't really describe to you, but it was so beautiful, and I was so mindful and aware. And I visited the whole of that place with joy, with understanding, and the nature's energy very strong. That's why that place was very beautiful. So Zhongtai Chanshi was not in the picture when before we go for the trip. That's why in the pre-briefing, there was nothing described about Zhongtai Chanshi. Until after I went there, then all these things manifest. Then there's another temple, I forgot the name already. I think Hui Rong can remember. It's a very small temple, but very beautiful, great beings' energy too. Where we're not supposed to visit, but something strange happened. I think it's one of the small temple where we visited in the early hours of our trip. So when we were there, I remember that Su Jie is supposed to receive us. She was so full of joy to receive us And the first thing he told us, he said, you all must be very, very blessed, he said. Then we asked why. He said, do you all know, the few days and night before we all arrived, this place was raining cat and dog, very severe heavy rain. Then she was worried as how to receive us and how can we really visit that place. But he said, surprisingly, that morning before we supposed to visit, the weather suddenly changed. It became very peaceful, very tranquil, very still, and the weather was fine. The sun started to rise again. It was a very beautiful day. And I think, according to her, is it the teacher also knew, and she also knew that something strange is happening the day. Then when he met us, she said she knew why. You all have good karma. Oh, then after that, a lot of things happened when we visit that place. And she even explained a lot of things to us. The temple was very well built in a very different way. Smaller scale, much, much smaller, but very beautiful. There is on an elevated low, a small hill, but facing a very beautiful horizon far away, the direction of Raymond. Then a lot of things happened when we were there to do the puja and all those things. And she even lead us in the Mahayana chanting way of developing the puja. And the energy was very good and very beautiful. That's why a lot of things happened during that trip. So this is the part I want to share so that it is a compliment to what actually happened, so that you all can understand why I say all this spiritual trip will turn out not only beautiful, it's beyond what we can anticipate. And when we were there, the weather too were very kind. It's like we were very blessed because, as I explained, Dominica Yamitas, because we are real cultivator and we rejoice and we share merit, we transfer merits to all beings, including Dhamma protectors, and we express our gratitude and our love towards all beings, including all the great beings. We thank them for their great blessing, for their great compassion, their guidance, and also whatever wholesomeness that they have bestowed upon us. So having gratitude to thank them for all their blessing, protection and guidance is very important. It's like we are very well protected when we are on the trip. The weather is very conducive and like somebody is helping us along the way to have all this beautiful condition falling into place. And when we are there, when we silent our mind, we can feel the joy, the vibration, the energy, everything. It was so beautiful, like everything is meant to be. So that was the uniqueness of that spiritual trip. Okay, we go back to the Dhamma sharing. We will have all 45 minutes, so then you can have your 45 minutes of awareness space meditation. Okay, just relax body and mind completely, maintain awareness to realize your true mind. Then you will progress along the path of meditation. You will understand a lot of things. Okay. You can slowly mindfully come out of meditation. Try to maintain the inner awareness, inner tranquility that you have developed, the inner peace, the inner calmness, and inner awareness that you have developed for as long as you can. These are the mind state that you need to develop the cultivation of daily mindfulness and to use it to live life so that you understand how to develop the cultivation of the true mind to meditate, to develop the awakening. The awareness nature within is very important. That one is different from your thinking mind, your mundane mind. Your thinking mind and the mundane mind is the dependent originating mind, condition arising mind, cause of the normal. It is impermanent. When you attach and cling and hold, it leads to suffering. And because it's impermanent, there is no reality. It's empty. It's not a permanent unchanging entity where you can say, this is me, this is I, therefore all this can be mine. So the purpose of realizing this understanding is what the Buddha called meditation. When you realize this, you understand who are you, what are you. Means the mundane mind, the thinking mind is not real. It has the universal characteristics of impermanent, leads to suffering, empty, non-self. That's why he said the five aggregates of form and mind are empty. They are not you. They are having the existential universal characteristics of anicchang, dukkhang, anatta. Whereas our true mind, our true nature within, you can realize it when you completely silent, when there is no more thought, no more thinking. That one will manifest. Then when you can be aware of it, just aware, without thought, that is your true mind, that is your true nature, that is your silent mind. That is the one that can shine forth with clarity and understanding, can awaken, can realize the truth, can understand what all this thing is. So that is the teaching. But it's not easy for normal people to understand, to penetrate. That's why this book is very good. Who are you? What are you? Eh? So before I open up for meditation, reporting, Q&A, I will continue the sharing a bit so that you understand what this topic is. Dharma sharing on who are you and what are you, subtitle, section 4.3. Tonight, like I promised, we will discuss this very interesting topic. We are supposed to develop the understanding of who are you, what are you. So anybody wants to try to answer this question of who are you and what are you? So this topic is very beautiful. I created a first subheading, 4.3.1. The five aggregates of form and mind, first aspect. You have to understand the five aggregates of form and mind in order to understand who are you, what are you, the two aspects. So I started by saying we have to start from basic, isn't it? So when you look around, what do you see? Are you able to answer that question? Who are you? What are you? Is the name that gave to you since birth really you? Or really what you are? Like Joyce, is Joyce really what she is? Then I think Joyce laughed. Because you know that is just the name, isn't it? Okay, so we go on and inquire deeper into this slowly. I don't know how to draw a particle. So this is the skeleton format. That's why I just draw the circle with the line and the triangle as the skirt. Okay, let's say this is choice. Hope you don't mind because it's just an example only. So this is Joyce, Sister Joyce. Okay. So who is she? Ah, very good. At least you cannot deny she has a physical form. Then she has a mind, which is the consciousness part. So the physical form together with the consciousness, the Buddha call you the form and mind. This is how Namarupa come about, or Namarupa come about. The five aggregate of form and mind, the first aspect. So the physical form together with the consciousness, the Buddha call it the first aspect of the five aggregate of form and mind. In Pali, it is called Nama Rupa or Namaru. But is this really you? This cannot be you because this is just the first aspect of the five aggregates of form and mind as a human being. So what the Buddha wants you to understand is to inquire deep into it to find out, is this really you? You don't have to look at the Dhamma book or look at the text or recall all the teaching. You just do a reality check. What does it mean? Now you investigate. Who are you and what are you? You know that you have a physical body. You cannot deny that, isn't it? Then you have a mind, which is consciousness trapped inside the physical body. So this form and mind, is it really you? You don't want to answer because you know through theory that it is anatta, non-self. So you think it is not you. But then every day you hold on to it. You cling on to it. And you use it. Yet you don't know what it is. That is the problem with humanity. So I would like to ask you one very simple question. If you don't know who are you, what are you, then who is living your life? Precisely the thought is living your life. Do you understand? That's why it is very important to understand who are you, what are you. Are the thought you? Did you think the thought? How can we really investigate into the truth and reality of this first aspect of the form and mind, which is a human being? Because we are born into this world, this existential world, this segment of our life as a human being. That's why we have this human form, manusa. So that is the first aspect, okay? The form and the mind. So this first aspect, there are more things to it, which I have not explained now. But I believe I explain later. Never mind, I just explain this because this part is more important. The physical form is called rupa, matter, or form, made up of the four elements. And this physical body or physical form has got no knowing. So it's obviously not you, isn't it? Very easy to relate. We are just a physical body, elements, no knowing. How can it be you? And form or elements goes the way of nature. That's why it's subject to old age, sickness, and death. It goes the way of nature, following nature's law. The moment it's born, it grows. Then it sustains itself. Then it reaches the peak and stop growing. We call it the decaying phase. Then finally, when condition cease to be, you die. It exhibits the three universal characteristics very clearly. But it's part of nature's condition. It follows nature's law. This is the way of nature. So the physical body is very easy to understand. Then the Buddha subdivided the mind into four more aspects or aggregates. He wants you to understand what is mind. And here he's referring to your thinking mind, your mundane mind, not your true mind. He said, what can your mind do as a human being? So we need to inquire, what can my mind do? So basically, there are four things that your mind can do. First, he said, our mind can arise the feeling. There is an aggregate of feeling. This mind can feel hot or cold, pleasant or unpleasant, whether it's painful sensation or pleasant sensation. So this ability to feel is very important. It's an aggregate of mind. As the Buddha said, there is a feeling aggregate. In Pali, he call it Vedana. Then the second ability of mind is your mind can see things, can hear things, can smell, taste, tactile, feel, and think. So what is this aspect? Means that mind can perceive through your seeing consciousness, through your hearing consciousness, smell, taste, tactile, and thought consciousness. Whatever it perceives is the external form, and it brings the external form into the mind. So the second aggregates of mind is perception. We have this unique ability to perceive. That is what mind is all about. Then the third ability of mind is to think, to arise mental intention, views, opinions, belief system, conditioning, mind states like happy, unhappy, fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, lamentation, or joy, happiness. Or the mind is very calm, very tranquil, very peaceful. Or the mind is very agitated, restless, the lack of peace. Or the mind is confused, full of doubt. All these are called mind states. Sankara, the Buddha called it. So Sankara is in fact the content of consciousness. Everything that we input into the mundane mind become its content. Means your views, your opinion, your belief system, your fear, your phobia, your various mind states, including all of the wholesome state like love, compassion, respect, gratitude, sincerity, honesty. All these are the various mind states. Even the peaceful tranquility mind, the tranquil mind that you experience, the calmness, the composed mind, the agitated mind, and all the various mind states, they are part of your mind's ability to arise those states. And the Buddha called that Sankara, or mental activity, mental expression, mental states. There's a lot of English word to actually define the third aggregate. And these aggregates of Sankara, which is the content of consciousness or mind states or whatever your mind can do, is actually very important. In fact, Sankara is inclusive of the first two aggregates of feeling and perception. So feeling, perception, and Sankara, the whole thing is also Sankara. And this whole thing is actually the content of consciousness. Yes, the consciousness is like a receptacle before it has its content. So that is the pure awareness. pure consciousness without its content. That is what the baby can arise. The pure consciousness, the pure mind, the awareness nature within. Before the aggregates of mind come in, before your views, opinion, your mind states, your whatever mental movement arise. That is the true mind ever shining. But because we have a brain, we have memory, we have conditioning, we have accumulated all of the views, opinion, and conditioning, our fear, our phobia, our experiences in life, good and bad memory. So this is the one that conditions us into that bundles of memory, which we call a human being, with its various views, opinion, conditioning, belief system, and various mind state. So this third aggregate of sankhara is very important. So the Buddha say, you have this ability to arise mental state, to think, to create thought process, to form your own views and opinion of things, to cling on to certain belief systems. And whatever you accumulate in your brain, your fear, your phobia, your insecurity, all this is part of the ability of mind to arise what he calls sankhara, or mental activity leading to content of consciousness. Then we have to inquire, what else can our mind do as a human being? We are endowed with all the physical senses, the five physical senses. We have the eye, the ear, the nose, the tongue, the bodily tactile, and the brain, memory. So together, there are six sense bases. Because of these six sense bases, our nature has the ability to trigger off all the six types of respective consciousness. That's why we have this ability of the mind to become conscious of what we see. We can become conscious of what we hear, what we smell, what we taste, what we tactile, feel, and think. This is why we are a human being. So the fourth aggregate of mind, which is consciousness, in Pali is called Vijnana, is very important. So the Buddha said our mind has these four things. Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, and Vijnana means our mind can feel, can perceive, can create mental states, thinking, form opinion, views, have all the various belief system, the memory, all those things. Then it can become conscious of things. And basically, this is what our mind is all about. So he said, when these four aggregate combine with the physical body, he called us the first aspect of the five aggregate of form and mind. And this is what the human being is all about. A physical body with a mental that has the four aggregate of mind, Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, Vijnana, trapped inside. That's why we can experience karma. We can experience all of the nature's law that governs life and existence. Because this consciousness that is trapped inside can feel, can become emotional, can develop all the fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow. And it can also develop joy, happiness when we have things going our way. So this aspect of understanding of who you are, what you are, is very important. And this is called the first aspect as a human being. And this human being, you have to meditate to understand, is it really you? I already explained. Our physical body, which is only element, goes the way of nature, no knowing, it cannot be you. Then we check, feeling when we meditate, we will come to realize feeling come and go. They never die. Then what is feeling? Is feeling really real? Is feeling really you? If feeling is really you, what will happen when there is a pleasant feeling that arises? You feel very good, like under aircon condition, temperature very conducive, everything. You feel good listening to music, everything. So that feeling is very pleasant. What happens if that condition is disrupted and suddenly you trigger off a thought that gives rise to fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow and lamentation, or an unpleasant feeling like disease and sickness? Did you die? You didn't die. Either. So if you didn't die, then how can feeling be you? Feeling come and go, you're still around. So definitely, feeling is not you. That's why the Buddha said, meditate, realize this. If feeling is not you, then why did it arise in you? Then who are you? What are you? What is this so-called mind? That's why finally you will come to the understanding that feeling is dependent originating, condition arising, causal phenomenon. Why? Well, without the senses, the six sense, or the six, the five physical senses and the brain, which is the last, there is no possibility of feeling. Feeling can only arise when consciousness comes into contact with the sense spaces. That's why when you see something, upon contact, feeling arises. Whatever you see, that consciousness, the seeing consciousness, the vision, if you like it, there is pleasant sensation. If you don't like it, there is unpleasant sensation. Then you realize feeling come and go. You are still around. You didn't die. So feeling is dependent originating, condition arising, causal phenomenon. Then you go on to the next aggregate. Perception is the same. You look at yourself. One moment you perceive what you see within your field of vision, the seeing consciousness. Next moment, you perceive something else within your field of consciousness. So perception also come and go, dependent originating. When it disappears, you didn't die. So how can perception be you? Then the various mind state. All of the mind state you can describe, they also come and go. Dependent originating, condition arising, causal phenomenon. Because of your views, your opinion, your conditioning, when you hold on to them, it conditions your mind to react, to stir, to give rise to all those mental states and emotions. Like fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow and lamentation, insecurity, your phobia, everything. Of course, there are also pleasant mind states. Like when you meditate very well, you become very calm, very peaceful, very tranquil. You experience peace. You experience joy, love, tranquility and stillness. So all this mind state can arise and pass away, but you didn't die. So how can it be you? That's why Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, they are not you. They are impermanent. They are dependent originating condition arising cause of not like the physical body. Then likewise, the last ability of mind is consciousness. You can become conscious of what you see. Then next moment, conscious of what you hear. When the consciousness disappeared, did you die? You didn't die. So like feeling, perception, and sankhara, consciousness also come and go, dependent originating. Dependent on the sense basis upon contact with the mind, then it triggers off consciousness. Means the mind is capable of being conscious. Conscious of what you see, But at the moment of consciousness, like the physics experiment, the light bulb lights up, means you become conscious at that moment. But the content of consciousness hasn't gone in. Your views, your opinion, your conditioning, and your belief system has not come in to interfere with what you see. That's why you do not stir your mind. You do not react. But that can only happen if you are a cultivator. If you have the true mind, you can be at the moment of consciousness before the content going. Most human beings come. They lack wisdom. They lack mindfulness, awareness. They cannot be at the moment of consciousness. Straight away, their mind react and stir with their views, opinion, and conditioning, and the content of consciousness go in, and their mind stir, and they react to sense experience. That's how they become deceived, deluded. They do not see things as they are. They are so conditioned by their views, opinion, conditioning, and belief system. That's why they see things deludedly, without understanding, without clarity. So they are deceived by consciousness, by the feeling, by the perception, by the various sankhara activity and mind states and consciousness. So when you are deceived, means you don't have right view, you don't understand the nature's law that governs life and existence. You deludedly hold on to this fine aggregate of form and mind, thinking that it's real, thinking that this human being is me, I. Feeling is me. That's why I'm happy, I'm unhappy, I'm miserable, I'm peaceful, or whatever. Yeah. Then since birth until now, you have been so conditioned by what education has taught you, by what your parent has taught you. And all this influence from your family background, your education background, your social media, everything, they have the power or effect of creating conditioning in the fellow human being or living being. And this conditioning is so powerful, so strong, that it really create very, very strong delusion in the living being. That's why that sakkayadity or self-delusion, thinking that you are real, you exist, you are so and so, is so strong, so powerful. That's why living being can't escape from that delusion. So the Buddha said, when you deludedly grasp and cling and believe you are real, what happened? You created the egoic mind, the personality of the me and the I. So the me and the I, the egoic mind, is the personality that you deludedly create. That's how the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion come about. Well, when you believe you are real, you exist, what happened? The personality will condition you to be greedy, selfish, because you will then want to own things and have things, possess things, control things. Then when you cannot get what you want, you become angry, emotional, sometimes even violent. That's why the evil roots of greed, selfishness, and anger, hatred, and violence come about. Then when certain things happen and you cannot understand, you have fear, you have worry, you have anxiety, and this is delusion. But you cannot understand the nature's law that governs life and existence. You don't know who are you, what are you. You deludedly believe that you exist, you are real. Then when you have a problem, a situation where you cannot resolve it, you develop fear, worry. And all these are the mental states That is very negative. The Buddha called this wrong thought, negative emotion. Wrong thoughts are thoughts that condition your fear, your worry, your anxiety, your sorrow, your lamentation, your phobia, your selfishness, your emotional negativity, your doubt, your intense insecurity and fear, all this. So this is what happens to most humans if they don't meditate. They don't realize their true mind, which is beyond the thinking mind, the five aggregate of form and mind. They will fail to understand who they are, what they are. Then they will never be able to understand the essential Dhamma that taught them how to see all this clearly, to understand all this, then put them in the appropriate places so that you know how to make use of them. If they are not me, like just now I went through with you, the five aggregate of my mind, or this human being with his physical body and his mind, mental aggregates. Rupa, Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, Vijnana. If they are not you, then who are you? What are you? This is meditation. This is inquiry. If my physical body is not me, then who am I? If my aggregates of mind are not me, then who am I? Then how did they arise in me? This is meditation. That's why you have to silence your mind. Realize the state, the awareness state, that is beyond thought, beyond mind. To go beyond the mundane mind, to realize our true mind, our true nature within, our awareness nature within, stabilize it. Then you will come to know there is another aspect within our nature, which is connected to the form and mind that we can access and develop the direct seeing, the awakening, the understanding. And this is what the Buddha's teaching is all about. So we will go back to the second part, the second aspect of the five aggregates of form and mind, so that you all can understand. The Buddha said there is a second aspect of who you are, what you are. The second aspect is the mental five aggregates of form and mind. This second aspect is what we call five mental aggregates of form and mind. To understand this second aspect, we have to meditate. What is this second aspect? We have to inquire. How did it arise? Yes, we have perception. Very good. Then I say, if somebody mentioned perception, I say, no, perception is only one of the aggregates. You need what? Yes, the senses. Very good. So this physical body has the five physical senses together with the brain, the six senses. Then there is a mind which can make contact with the sense basis, the trigger of their respective sense door consciousness. Mind itself is also a mental sense basis because the brain, called the mind door. So this sixth sense door becomes the sense basis for consciousness to arise. Then with every moment of sense door contact, it will trigger off the respective sense door consciousness. Can you understand? You have your physical organ, which can be your eye, EYE, or your ear, your nose, your tongue, or tactile. Upon contact, it will trigger off the respective sense door consciousness. That is seeing consciousness, hearing consciousness, smell, taste, tactile, and thought consciousness. That's why you can have the ability to see via the seeing consciousness, which can arise upon contact of mind with the organ of the eye. Similarly, for your hearing consciousness, smell, taste, and tactile, in which feeling is part of its content. Then you can also arise via the mind or thought consciousness, because mind is also an organ, the brain. So these six centers are the basis of life, basis of consciousness and living. From here, you inquire, you meditate, and develop the understanding. So now I ask you another question. How do you know the world? How do you interact with the world? The answer is obvious, eh? Through your senses that trigger off the respective consciousness, right? And when consciousness arises, what happens? That is where you have to meditate to understand whether this second aspect of the five aggregates of form and mind is really you or not, or are they just something else? So this second aspect of the five aggregates of form and mind. So this second aspect of the five aggregates of form and this second aspect is the five mental aggregates of form and mind. With every moment of consciousness, you have already known that there are four types of mind aggregate. What are they? What are the four? First is what? Feeling, yes, Vedana. Second is perception, Sanya, yes, because this is what your mind can do. Then the third one is Sankara, or mental activities of mind, content of consciousness, or thinking and mental states, and everything that your mind can do, including all your planning, scheming, deceiving, cunningness, etc. Then you can also become conscious of things within the phenomenal world of consciousness. So you will know these are the four types of mind aggregate. Then the form aggregates, mental form, how does it enter the mind or comes about? How does it enter your mind? Through what? Through the aggregates of perception, isn't it? The Pali word for perception is sanya. So through this sanya, the moment you perceive the external mental form or the external phenomenal, the form will enter your mind. So this is mental form as perceived by your thought. And because this mental form actually arises within the mind via sanya, that's how within the mind there is also this five mental aggregates of form and mind. Do you understand? So with every moment of sense or consciousness, the five aggregates of form and mind, which you call the thought, will also arise. The whole thing, the content, the consciousness and its content, you call it a thought. Krishnamurti also call it the thought. Hence, thought is basically the five aggregates of form and mind. And they arise and pass away every moment, every instant, naturally, with your form and mind mechanism within the human body. That's why you have to meditate to see all this clearly, to see their dependent origination. Understand all this clearly. Then you will come to one realization which the Buddha always emphasized on. So here, the English is not so good because this was exact transcript based on what I spoke. It's a spoken. My daughter will open up and mute her. Somebody's mind is not muted. Muted, really? Okay. So be careful with your mind. Do not allow it to unmute. Okay, I'll read on. They have the characteristics of impermanence. The moment you grow up and cling, suffering comes to be. And because they are impermanent, it is not a permanent unchanging entity that you can grasp onto, cling onto and hold onto. That's why it is anatta. But if you fail to see this, if you fail to understand this, you will be deluded. That's why the next section, 4.3.3, is self-delusion or sakaya ditti. Then because of their impermanent characteristic, you can also see very clearly that they are not a permanent unchanging entity that you can grasp onto, hold onto, and deludedly cling onto as the me and the I, which is sakaya ditti or self-delusion. So because of that, it is also anatta, not a permanent, unchanging entity, hence non-self and empty nature. They are all impermanent because they are all conditioned arising following nature's law, like the physics experiment. You will see very clearly in your meditation when your mindfulness and heedfulness are very stable. All of this arising and passing away, every one of the five aggregates of form and mind, you can check, including your physical form, the first aspect. They are all conditioned arising, impermanent and empty, with the three universal characteristics of anicchang, dukkang, anatta. In Mandarin, it's called wu chang, ku wo. So can you understand all this? Why is it impermanent? Because they are all conditioned arising phenomena, arising and passing away within the phenomenal world of consciousness all the time. Without condition, it ceases to be. When condition arises, it arises. When condition continues to sustain itself, it will continue to exist. But when condition ceases to be, it will cease to be. So how real can it be? As real as it can be, it is only within the moment when it arises. Do you understand? Then the sustainer of it is the same. But during the sustainer phase, every moment the condition is again different. But because of the supporting condition are still there, they are like really existing. They are like real. This physical body and the form and mind. That's why you deludedly grasp and cling onto it and call it the I and the me. That's why the Buddha say, if you do that, you have sakaya ditti or self-delusion. You have to meditate to really understand why this form and mind is not you. And when you realize that the form and mind or body and mind with every aggregate of it is just like what the Buddha had described to you, to the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, is the sutra on non-self. The sutra on the three universal characteristics of impermanent, suffering state, and non-self or empty nature existence. Then you will get a shock of your life and wake up to its reality. The Buddha asks, is form permanent? So what is your answer? You know, isn't it? Physical form make up of element only, and they has no knowing. They will go the way of nature. They will decay. They will get old and one day die or disappear and disperse. So that's why it is impermanent. It doesn't belong to you. It's dependent on originating. Then the Buddha asks, is form satisfactory? Is it satisfactory? Definitely no. Why? Because you will get old, get sick, and finally die. Even the beautiful flower will wither. Everything will decay and be diseased. And finally, you will all wither and die. Wither, get sick and die. Or cease to be. So if form is impermanent, and if form is painful and unsatisfactory, then is it right to call it, this is me, this is I. Therefore, this can be mine. Do you see the point? Because you know it's condition arising. Hence, it will change. And the worst is the physical body is made up of only element, no knowing. And that is unsatisfactory. Here it goes the way of nature. It gets old, it gets sick, and one day it dies. So that's why, because of that, this cannot be you, according to the Buddha. So Anatta Lakkhana Sutta is very powerful. So when you know all this clearly, form is impermanent, form is unsatisfactory, will equals the way of nature. So is it right to say this is me, this is I? It's obviously a delusion, because this thing is by nature can be clearly seen as impermanent, not a permanent unchanging entity. So how can it be you? If it's you, you can say to it like this physical body, because you have control over it. It belongs to you. It's a permanent unchanging. Then you can say, don't get old, don't get sick, don't die. But is it possible? You can't. Even like feeling, you tell feeling, if you own it, if it's really you, I want only pleasant feeling, good feeling. It is impossible. That's why whatever that is impermanent, unsatisfactory, is not a permanent, unchanging entity that you can cling on to, hold on to, and grasp on to and say, this is me. This is all. So that is the understanding, the teaching. Then I read on a bit more. Because whatever that is impermanent is not a permanent, unchanging entity where you can hold on to, cling on to, and grasp on to. That's why it is anatta. Then the other aspect is empty nature. Empty means what? As real it can be when the condition cease to be. As real as it can be when the condition ceases to be, it ceases to be. That's why when the Buddha said, whatever that is of the nature to arise is of the nature to cease. And whatever that is born will die. So according to the Buddha, what has been born has already passed. So no amount of sorrow and lamentation can bring back the dead. So that's why he said, no need to cry, no need to lament, no need to be sorrowful, because the physical body is not you. He know you, he know me. So if form is not you, then similarly, you can also investigate via meditation, is feeling permanent, and is feeling really you? Feeling comes and goes. Every moment of feeling, you experience it. It is going to pass away. Every moment of feeling you experience is going to pass away, isn't it? Then another consciousness with another feeling, they always arise and pass away, isn't it? Similarly, for perception, activity of mind, and consciousness, they always come and go, come and go. So you must see clearly via your direct seeing, they are impermanent in your meditation, not as a theory, a concept, or an idea. You can see them with the silent mind appearing and disappearing. Then you will see clearly a condition arising, dependent originating phenomena. Then you will come to realize that they are all unsatisfactory. Why? It's because every feeling, no matter how pleasant, how good, will transform and changes to become unsatisfactory, finally. Mainly because the deluded one still have duality. They don't have equanimity. They don't have wisdom. They develop craving, clinging, grasping. Means they cling on to one aspect of duality. That's why they create duality such as like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant sensation of their sense experience. So because feeling is impermanent and unsatisfactory, the Buddha said, it cannot be you because it's not a permanent and changing entity. So any feeling, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant, is a prelude to suffering. That one is a very important understanding. But the other thing which I came to realize via my own cultivation is you should also ask and inquire deeply into the question, if feeling is not me, if pleasant feeling that has arisen passes away, then I should die with it, isn't it? But how come feeling come and go and I'm still around? I didn't die. The form and mind is still around. Every moment of consciousness, every moment of feeling arises and passes away. But I am still around. So can feeling be me? This is an easier way to realize or understand that feeling is not you. That it is impermanent. You cling on to it, grasp onto it, you suffer. And because of that, it is anatta, non-self and empty. Because it comes and goes. Hence, condition arising. So all these aggregates, they have the same characteristic. Then whatever mental form that you bring from the external phenomenal world into your mind, if you deludedly grasp and cling and give meaning and attach, suffering will be the result. That's why when you see things as they are, there is no form. That's why in the Surangama Sutta is stated, perception of form is consciousness. So perception of form is consciousness is very beautiful. Who perceive? What perceive? It arises naturally through consciousness upon contact, like the physics experiment. Then the second part of the statement is even more beautiful. The Surangama Sutta says, whereas its non-perception is wisdom. Do you know why? Why did Surangama Sutta state that perception of form is consciousness? Where there is mundane perception. Your mundane mind arise to become conscious of it. But when you see things as they are with the true mind, there is no form because there is no word. Your true mind is without word, without concept, without the aggregate of mind. It sees things as they are. That's why whereas it's non-perception, it's wisdom. When you don't perceive the form, the aggregate of mind, you see things as they are, without the words, without the concept. That's how the understanding comes. That's why, whereas it's non-perception, is wisdom. So perception of form is always mundane seeing, mundane consciousness. That's why that one, you can say form, like seeing mountain. Mountain is mountain. Then I read on a bit more. You remember the Zen saying, the student came running around and said, Master, Master, I have just awakened. I'm already enlightened. Then the master say, oh, very good. Then the master point to the table and ask, what is that? The master say, table. Sorry, the answer is, Master, it's a table. The master whack him. You are enlightened, yet you still perceive table, the form. What does it mean? He is using his mundane mind to perceive form. Do you understand? That's why perception of form is consciousness, because perception is an aggregate of mind, and that is the mundane mind. That is not the true mind, not the direct seeing as yet. For the direct seeing is before the knowing, before the aggregate of mind come in. Do you understand? When you see things as they are, you don't say anything, or you don't see anything. That's why Kan San, Yu Si San. The first one, they use mundane mind to see. That's why when they see mountain, they perceive it as mountain. Kan San, Si San. That's why when you have the true direct seeing, you see things as they are, then there is no word, no perception, nothing. Thing is just the way it is. You cannot describe it because you are just aware. That's why its non-perception is wisdom. Then only can you say, can you really see? Then I ask, can you follow? Still cannot follow. Then the second part, Kan San, Pusu San, come from the direct see. Who perceive, what perceive, thought perceive. Do you understand? Whereas the true nature or the true mind never perceive anything, it's just aware. Can you follow? If you cannot, you must tell me you cannot. Then I can give you other example. Can follow a little bit or not? Some of you maybe can. So very good. You see, when you talk about perception, it means see. Do you understand? If you perceive through your thinking mind or mundane mind, then the aggregates come in. That's why you are no longer aware. You are no longer in sati. Do you understand? That's why a thought-based meditation, the moment thought is active, you never aware anymore. You are not in sati anymore. You can never understand what sati is. That's why you cannot break free. So this is where the true Dhamma is. Every time you perceive form, that is consciousness, the mundane mind. The five aggregates of form and mind, you are using the mundane mind. That's why you get trapped, because mundane mind has this activity going on. It has its wrong view, sakkāya-ditthi, self-delusion, and it has its ignorance. That's why it keeps on conditioning you to react. Your views, your opinion, and your conditioning keep on causing you to be trapped within. Whereas if you silence your mind through your meditative training to develop heedfulness more and more, so that there will be more and more of this moment of awareness or silence, which is space between thought, then you will become less heedless. Then when you are less heedless, there will be less thinking and perceiving. Then your mind will settle down and you can just be silent and be aware. Your awareness then is just aware, aware, and aware. That's why after you can experience the two type. Sorry, I read again. Huh? That's why after that you can experience the two type of awareness or sati. The first one is just spacious awareness without a center. Whereas where you just silent without a center, and whatever that arise within the oneness, if you want to know, you can know. Then there is a second type, which is specific phenomenal awareness. Your awareness and the phenomenal move as one, whether physical or mental or nature's phenomenon. Then you will live life that way. Do you understand? Then your daily mindfulness will become very different. And you will start to see this very clearly, that this form and mind, they have the characteristics of impermanent. As you insight into them, then you will awaken to it. Then you will come to realize that this fire aggregate of form and mind is not you. So this first aspect of the fire aggregate of form and mind as a human being is, so if this is not you, then who are you? What are you? Is there a person inside there? But if all these aggregate of form and mind are not you, then the question is, how come they arise in you within this form and mind of yours? They keep on arising and passing away, isn't it? So, what are they? And who are you? What are you? Anybody wants to try to answer that question? Ah, yes, Lily, very good. Okay, that's one way of explaining it. Anybody else? You can try, don't worry. Based on your understanding, just give it a try. Just like what Lily had just tried. And it's very good. Okay, we stop there. Yeah?
Hello.
Yes, Pocheng. Amitofo. Yes.
Amitofo.
Yeah.
Say something.
Good, good, good. Sadhu, sadhu, Pocheng. Yeah. Yeah, nice to hear
sadhu,
from you.
Sadhu. Actually, so-called session of this book, it really gives me a lot of understanding, you know, of what you shared.
Correct.
Because once I, you know, come in contact with the silent mind and the nature, whatever
you can understand.
Yes. There's so much meaning compared to just read the text without the meditation experience. You know?
Yes. That's why you can have the understanding, rejoice, sadhu.
Yes, I can rejoice and the understanding is totally different from just reading the text. The meaning is like, you know, the reading of the words versus the direct.
Yeah, the direct see. Very good.
It's very different.
Very
you know?
Different. Completely different.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Father. You cannot imagine what you say.
Yeah.
By words, you know.
Yeah.
Words and the concept.
Very true. Yes.
Not the same.
Yeah.
The same,
completely
you know?
Different. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this, this is not theoretical teaching.
Yes,
this one is a realization that comes through the meditative experience, the meditative understanding and awakening. And that realization transforms that form and mind to really understand what that true nature, that true mind is. And the meaning stand up. Everything become very beautiful, very clear.
Yes. Very clear, and I mean, you understand exactly what you say.
Ah,
right?
Correct.
That, that
yes.
is the point, you know.
Ah.
You understand exactly what you say. You
correct.
Know? It's not a theory, and the thing is, brother, you are the only one I must emphasize, say this, you know.
Yeah.
No, no teacher that I listen that say exactly what you
correct,
say.
Correct,
you know?
Correct, correct. Because this one is not easy. Unless that person who share has that realization and understanding, he cannot explain. He cannot explain.
Yes. Yes, correct. Cannot
he
explain
cannot
the way you explain
yes.
it. You know? It is you see the way you say it, like example you said like example you get feeling is very easy to express.
Correct, correct.
Comes and go and then you never die, you know?
Yeah.
I
that
mean,
one is very beautiful.
The point, you never die, you see, so how can it be?
Ah,
you know,
how can feeling be you? It's very obvious.
That is like, I mean, we know what is feeling. Everybody knows what is feeling.
Yeah.
So by saying that, you express the understanding clearly from cultivators, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
So that they will not deludedly cling on to the feeling, thinking that, I am sad, I am miserable, I am unhappy. Because feeling was never you, just like fear was never you. Why you have fear? Why do you hold on? I still have fear. I still have greed. I'm a cultivator. I should be free from fear. That is all knowledge, delusion. But when you really understand that fear was not you, then what is the problem? That is just a dependent originating mind state, mundane mind, a phenomenon. Arise and pass away. So if I know that all this feeling and content of consciousness or mind state are not me, then I got no problem with all these things. Where these things are dependent originating. They come and they go. Ultimately, non-self. Empty. He know you, he know me. Then that transformation in understanding is the one that awakened that form of mind. Then from that moment onward, that form and mind is no longer deluded, deceived. Then that thing become very, very clear. That's why that form and mind, when it awakened, it is no longer holding on to things the old way, the heedless way, or through knowledge, through Dhamma knowledge, which is not the real wisdom. The real wisdom comes from the understanding and the awakening. They really wake up. Yeah, this is what the teaching is all about. They saw it in their meditation. Through the silent mind, they awaken to it. That he know you, he know me. Nothing. Everything is just dependent originating, condition arising, causal phenomenon. Come and go, come and go. Everything within the moment is just condition arising. When condition cease to be, it ceases. When condition continue to sustain itself, it sustain itself and exists. That is the nature's law. You must see it. Silent your mind and awaken to it. Then when you awaken, you realize the true mind that has the direct seeing and the ability to awaken is completely beyond the form of mind. That is the deathless element. That is the true nature, the true mind within each and every living being. And this is the one that people fail to realize, fail to understand. That's why they are constantly lost in thought, lost in memory, knowledge. That's why they fail to see, they fail to understand. So, very good, Pocheng Sadhu to you, for your ability to have this understanding. Sadhu. Yeah.
It's a very beautiful book.
Yeah.
It's a very beautiful book.
Very beautiful.
And,
yeah.
Many times just
just to understand.
Because the reading, I mean, after reading a few times, the understanding deepened.
Yeah, it will deepen.
So many things that you wrote in here that is so meaningful. You know, many things.
Correct.
And then the way you express it is always different because not knowledge is the, you know, the true nature that you're writing it. I mean, it is not the knowledge that you can, it's fixed, you know. It's
Very true.
It's so beautiful every time I look at it. Yeah, many ways of expressing it, you know.
Thank you so much for saying, Sadhu. Very good.
Yes. So everybody must understand they have two minds. That's
That is the
explanation of
very important fundamental understanding.
Yes.
Otherwise, you cannot break through. You cannot progress along the path of cultivation.
Yes.
That understanding of that two mind, the two aspect of mind, is very important.
Yes. Very beautiful sharing, and everybody had to listen to him.
Sadhu.
They didn't attend this session because the so-called foundation of this, foundation of this, who are you and what are you, about the two mind that
is
so important, and beginning, you know, of our real cultivation, you know, it's really good, I think.
Yeah, it's very beautiful.
Yes, everybody must read and also
listen,
because Brad, you shared a lot of things, you know, that is in depth. You know, if you catch it, you really find it, wow, you know, that is...
Yeah, there is a lot of wisdom behind. Yeah, a lot of joy. Then later on, as we go into the book, you will also learn further that if the form and mind is not you, then who are you? What are you? The relationship. And that part, later on in the book, I explain. Then how to make use of that understanding that the Buddha has taught us to understand life and to live life. Then you will come to know, even though the form and mind is not you, but is subject to karma. That aspect is very important, means you cannot simply do things, but that one is subject to karma. You have your duty, that's why you will know that your duty towards this law of karma is very important. But that will make sure your karmic nature is intact. Then with that understanding, you will know, even though the form and mind is not you, but it has its function, its purpose, then you will know how to use it. And yet, not cling on to it, deceived by it, and deluded by it. So, you will know that it is not you, but it is part of your karmic nature. The form and mind, which is the vehicle and the tool for your nature to arise, to experience life, to live. And all these understandings are so beautiful, it will flower later on as we go through the book. That's why it's very beautiful. Today is just the first two parts. The spiritual trip, followed by the initial introduction of the five aggregates of form and mind, and a little bit of the true mind's understanding. I haven't come into the karmic nature, the spiritual nature, and the true understanding of this five aggregate of form and mind to really understand the full picture of how to use this understanding to live life, to understand life. Then from there, you will see the beautiful teachings of the Buddha. And this is what cultivator fail to understand. Very good, Hoseng Sadhu.
Sadhu.
My nature also rejoices. So, okay, I think we will end. 6:10 already.